We welcome you here to the Arabian Sports Talk here on 91.7 WEEM. But once again, alongside Ryan Davis, Lucas Cart, and Aiden Wilson, I'm your host, Dawson Perrell. For today's episode, we'll be looking over to the NBA side of things, more specifically the NBA playoffs. As we were recording this, it's currently May 5th. It's Wednesday. It's just after the Game 5 for the 76ers, Celtics, and the Suns Nuggets. So got to keep that in mind. But as the time you're hearing, this is probably just about a week from today. Round 3 will probably get started, round 2 finishing up. But for today, we'll be looking back to the round 1, recapping how we got here, and then looking forward to the next couple rounds. Who would we say are our favorites at this point? Who we think could play a big part? And overall, just our initial reactions and then our initial predictions here. But starting us off, of course, with the hands down, the biggest upset of the playoffs so far, number 8 Heat taking down the number 1 top overall seed, Giannis Antetokounmpo, and the Bucks in just 5 games at that. Now, this is the first 8-1 upset we've seen since 2012. That one was all the way back. 2012 76ers beat Derrick Rose and the Bulls, and this is only the 6th 8-1 upset we've seen in NBA history. And of course, the big headline name for this series, Jimmy Butler. He averaged 37.6 points in this series, 6 rebounds and 4.8 assists. And overall, of course, heading into it, the Bucks were clear favorites. Just taking a look here, there are negative 1,200 favorites heading into the series. And I think although Bucks struggled, I think in the end, I mean, they lost to the Heat. I think the Heat played very well more than the Bucks struggled. I think if you put any team in the Bucks situation, they might not have lost to the Heat, but they would have struggled. I think the Heat, of course, they're peaking at the right time. You just take a look at their stats for that first round among the playoffs as of now. So both the first series and the second series, they're shooting 38.5% from three. That's the third among all playoffs teams, and without Tyler Hero at that. So I think the Heat, the bottom line is they're peaking at the right time. And then for the Bucks, I mean, I think, yeah, you're a great team, but I think you just struggled, couldn't get it together.
Yeah, Jimmy Butler played really good in that series, but also Giannis got hurt, I think, second game got hurt, yeah. And then, I mean, Jimmy Butler, and then Kyle Lowry kind of showed out a little bit in those, and then you said Tyler Hero with that hand injury. Those two big injuries really made a difference in that series, I think.
But off the bench, the Miami Heat had a very good depth lineup to match with what Milwaukee was bringing. But Cody Zeller was good in a couple of those games, not scoring a bunch, but a very key fundamental piece. Also adding Kevin Love out of the buyout market. He had a couple big games, but he's mostly been featured big time against the New York Knicks, who they're facing now.
I mean, yeah, Dawson, as you were saying, for Jimmy Butler, his highest game in that series was obviously that 56-point performance. I think Jimmy Butler indistinctively was the best player, obviously, for the Heat in that series. And as you mentioned, Tyler Hero, I mean, he went out, game one with a hand injury?
Yeah, I think so.
And then Giannis out. So obviously this series was full of injuries, but some people that we do have to point out, obviously Jimmy Butler, Kyle Lowry, Bam Adebayo, Chris Middleton, he did step up for Giannis. And I think Drew Holiday did lack the series, which is why the Heat did advance.
Yeah, and I think obviously the big headline heading out of this series was head coach for the Bucks, Mike Budenholzer. I'm not sure exactly how to say his name, but he was fired, right? That was obviously, I think, a very big surprise across the NBA. Of course, the Bucks, they had the top overall seed, best regular season record in the NBA. Mike Budenholzer, he was a Coach of the Year candidate. He won the NBA Finals just back in 2001. So I don't know if I'm just not really used to this. It's really my first year watching the NBA pretty intensely, but I was very surprised by this. I think, sure, you slip up once, and yeah, the coach, he didn't have the best series. I think he could have played his cards a lot different, and at least this series could have been looking at least a bit better rather than only in 5 games. I think if you put Giannis on Jimmy Butler more, because I think at least Giannis himself said he wished he guarded Jimmy Butler more in an interview. So I think he struggled, but then again, I think Coach Mike, he won a series. He had the best overall record, and he was going in the right direction. The Bucks were looking good. So I think it's a bit of an overreaction here for the Bucks to just untangle it all, be like, let's just restart our whole front office just because you lost one series. And again, I think the Bucks played not the best, but they didn't play horrible. It was just the Heat were just that good. And I mean, playoff Jimmy, he was already a thing, but now he really is a thing, right? Playoff Jimmy is definitely a name that's being thrown all over the place now. So I think it was an overreaction, but we'll go around the room. Do you think a head coach for the Bucks, Mike Budenholzer, deserved to be fired?
No, I really don't think it. I mean, it was one bad series for the Bucks, and I mean, he won it for them 2 years ago. You have a really good team with Giannis, Chris Middleton, Drew Holiday. I feel like it was just, I really think, yeah, you said overreaction. I feel like they shouldn't have moved on that quickly from him for losing two years in a row, not going to the finals 2 years in a row.
I don't think it's an overreaction because in the past, Coach Boonhauser has had problems adjusting in the playoffs because I think in 2016, he was the head coach of the Hawks, and they made the playoffs, but he failed to make adjustments late in the game, and they got taken out, I believe, the first or second round in that series, in that playoff stint.
But yeah, for the Bucks, I think they're just going to move on from their whole core in general. I mean, we know Drew Holiday is kind of getting old, same with Chris Middleton, and I mean, they're both, you could say, sort of overpaid, so I think they're going to redesign their roster, obviously surrounding Giannis. But speaking for Coach Budenholzer, it is unfortunate, and I don't know if you guys know, but there was a headline. One of his family members did pass away just a couple hours or so before, I think, game two it was. So I think it definitely is an overreaction, and I do feel bad for Coach. But as I said, for the Bucks, I think they're just trying to move on from this core that they have right now.
Yeah, and I think, like, you fire head coach, surely Bucks front office are thinking of getting rid of other people and making changes over the offseason. Maybe some players we're going to be seeing that the Bucks are going to be trading away, looking to trade. Because, I mean, if you're going to get rid of your head coach, you obviously want to rearrange something, because head coach along with Giannis are probably your two biggest pieces of that Bucks team. So, obviously, as we went around, a lot of us said it was overreaction. Lucas, I can get your point where it's kind of like, if you struggle in the playoffs, what's the point, right? And then you go back to that, really all sports have this discussion of, say, this coach is doing great in the regular season, but he struggles in the playoffs. Is that coach worth keeping hold? I think for college basketball, of course, I look at Matt Painter for Purdue. I mean, he's notorious for having all these regular season rewards, and then in the playoffs or in the postseason in this scenario, he struggles. So I think it really just depends on your perspective. If, like, you have all these regular season accolades, you have all these regular season achievements, do you stay with the same coach? And obviously, the Bucks front office thought the other way of things. But you look at the Heat more specifically. We talked quite a bit about the Bucks here. Is this the best 8 seed we've seen in NBA history? That's a lot of talk going around. I think, obviously, the 8 seed for the Knicks all the way back, I think it was early 2000s, they made it to the finals. So it's going to be tough to beat them. But as of now, Heat are looking like a top favorite, of course, as I was mentioning. They're peaking at the right time. Their three-point percentage is very hot right now, 38.5, I just mentioned there. That's the third among all playoff teams. And again, without Tyler Herro, without Victor Oladipo, I think this team is looking very, very solid. And on top of that, you look at their very beginning. They were in the play-in. They were the first 7 seed to ever lose in the play-in against an 8 seed. And obviously, that might have sucked at the time. But in the end, it might have worked out for them, as I think if they won that game against the Hawks, if they went on to face the Celtics, we couldn't be seeing these Heat where they're at right now. So in the end, I don't know. I'm going to say they're not quite the best 8 seed. I think, again, there's some others that, but if they go to the finals, I think you have to say they are. And then on top of that, they have ton of, like, star power. Of course, Jimmy Butler, Bam Adebayo, his name got mentioned. He's a top three, top four defender in the league. So I think it's tough to beat him. And as of now, it looks like they got the Knicks all wrapped up. It's 3-1. Of course, as the time you listeners are hearing that series will be long over. So you'll know, unless the Knicks have some crazy comeback, but most likely the series will be over. But I think if they make it to even the conference finals, there's some talk that they're the best seed of all time.
Yeah, they've been really good. Jimmy Butler's been averaging, I think, 27.1 points a game this postseason. I mean, as you said, the 56-point game, I'm pretty sure, is what Aiden said was is really good for him. I feel, and he's really taking the leadership role on this team without Tyler Herro, Victor. I mean, Kyle Lowry also doesn't really get a whole lot of points, but he's one of the best passers in the league. Mm-hmm.
But the farthest 8 seed who's ever made it is the 98-99 Knicks. They made it to the conference championship, but they...
I thought they made it to the finals. They don't make it to the finals.
No, they did not make it to the finals. I believe they lost to the Bulls in 7, but... But they're probably... If they make it to the finals, they'll probably be the first 8 seed in history to do it.
Yeah, I think so.
Dawson, I do agree with you, though. I think they have potential, but they're just not there yet. I think making it past the injured Bucks in the first round, sure, it's something to mention, but as I just said, I mean, they were injured with Giannis out and obviously some behind-the-scenes problems for the head coach, Mike Budenholzer. They do have a tough roster, though. Bam Adebayo, Kyle Lowry. I mean, we've seen Max Strus show up a couple of nights.
Yeah.
Gabe Vincent even. And somebody to mention for the Heat, Duncan Robinson. He hasn't been on par compared to last season's or seasons before, but he's still a top shooter in the league. So I think if the Heat do make it just a little bit further, they could be up there for contention, but I don't think they are just quite yet.
Yeah, and I think one more thing to mention here before we move forward. Yeah, you look at the Heat, you say, well, sure, they have a tough playoff schedule. They're an 8 seed, but really they haven't. As you were mentioning, the number one Bucks, they were beat up. And then with the coaching problems, I think really any other playoff team could have beat that Bucks team. And I think a lot of people undermine how much Giannis plays a role in that. I mean, of course, all people admit he's the star, but I think he just plays such a pivotal role. You take away Giannis from that Bucks team, they're a whole different squad. And I think at that, they're one of the lower teams out. If say they don't have Giannis, I don't think they even make the playoffs. So I think that he just plays a huge role in that. But we'll move forward now to another huge upset. This side on the complete other side of the bracket with the number two Lakers and the number seven Lakers, number two Grizzlies. Of course, the Lakers won that one 4-2 in six games. Obviously, there's a lot of talk behind the series. Dylan Brooks, he's stirring the pot as usual, talking a lot of media about LeBron. He's old and all this. And LeBron, I mean, he answered back. Of course, that big three for the Lakers were looking pretty good with Anthony Davis. I mean, healthy Anthony Davis has proved that he can do it. He averaged 22.2 in the series. LeBron James, I mean, of course, he's been in the playoffs the most out of any other player in the league. He averaged 20.8 throughout the series, by the way. And then D'Angelo Russell, their addition around that trade deadline all-star break, he's averaged 16.7 in this series. And Lucas, I don't remember in our playoff predictions, you picked the Lakers here or the Grizzlies?
I picked the Lakers, but here's a take. Do you think Dylan Brooks deserves the amount of money he wants, the $27 million a year?
No, I'd say no way, but we'll get on that here soon. Of course, great job, Lucas and I, picking the right series here. Unfortunately, guys on the couch over there couldn't get the right one. Of course, you went with the Grizzlies there. But another question here, of course, in my opinion, I think if the Lakers are healthy, are they the favorites here on out for the NBA Finals?
I don't know. It's going to be pretty difficult for, I mean, you got the Suns, you got the Nuggets playing right now. Those are two really difficult teams. But I mean, yeah, the Lakers are really looking good. AD, as you said, when he's healthy, he's really good. And then LeBron, he's always good.
Yeah.
But I think the Lakers can make it to the Western Conference Finals, but I don't know if they'll have enough. They have the power to match up with Phoenix and Denver, but Denver's bench in these last couple games has been amazing. And the problem the Suns are running into is bench depth, because they have their only two bench guys are TJ Warren and really Terrence Ross, but they haven't been able to play a bunch of minutes. So I think the Lakers can easily make it to the Western Conference Finals. It just depends on the team they play to make it to the finals.
I mean, yeah, for the Lakers, just rewinding back to that first round, obviously as they played the Grizzlies, Dawson, as you were mentioning, a healthy AD definitely has proved himself, and I think that's something that went into my prediction for the first round. But obviously as they made it past the first round, now playing the Warriors, we definitely see the colors shining out for all the stars on the Lakers. And Lucas, as you were mentioning, they do have the ability to keep up with the people in the next round, as in the Nuggets and the Suns. But mentioning for the Suns, I mean, we see, as you're mentioning, the bench roles, they don't have many bench players because, of course, the package that they sent to Brooklyn for KD, I don't think that has worked out too well for them. But in these last two games, we actually have seen Devin Booker and KD himself average about, what, like 30? They had 70 combined a couple games ago. So I think if the Lakers do make it to the Western Conference Finals, it will go to 7. And I honestly can't see that happening.
Yeah, but I think, of course, you look at the Suns, Devin Booker, he's currently averaging the most points a game in the playoffs. He's looking very solid. But then again, you mentioned there at the bench. And then for the Lakers side of things, I think their bench is very solid. Of course, we saw Austin Reeves step up early in that round one. He had some great games. Lonnie Walker in that last game against the Warriors coming in, putting up 15 in the fourth quarter, giving them the ability to bounce forward there. I think another player is to mention around. You got Rui Hachimura, whatever his name is. He's a great defender. He's also coming off the bench from Jared Vanderbilt. overall, I think this Lakers squad can be very deep. And as Luke was mentioning with the, say the Nuggets go forward, which it looks like they will at this point, just of last night, they beat the Suns. They went up 3-1, and I think it's definitely going to be tough.
3-2.
For the 3-2. Yeah, you're right. 3-2.
But still,
so,
even then.
Oh, yeah, even then. And then if the say the Suns win at home, which is very a real possibility, push to a game seven, you got to go back and win at Denver, which is not the easy task. So I think right now in the West is definitely a question mark. I think I would say it's a lock. The Lakers go past the Warriors. LeBron has never blown a 3-1 lead in his play in his several playoff games. Of course, he beat the Warriors in a 3-1 lead, but never lost it. And I think that's on lock. And then say the Nuggets come on top. I think that'll be a great series with the Nuggets and the Lakers. But we'll move on over to, in my opinion, some of the better games we've seen so far over with at least the current, the Celtics 76ers, as I was mentioning there at our intro. Currently, 76ers, Celtics, they just finished up with their game five. 76ers took down the Celtics at Boston, go up 3-2 in a huge game. Of course, that game five can usually decide who's going to win the series overall. And then, of course, now the home court going back to Philadelphia, it's going to be really tough for Boston to win in this next game. And 76ers, of course, Joel Embiid did a lot of work down there. James Harden, and overall, they're looking very hot. I'd see they're a lot of people's favorites as of now. And if they can take down the Celtics, I mean, I don't think why not, because I think they could easily cruise past the Heat unless the Heat somehow continue their rampage. But I think as of now, I personally think 76ers are my favorite.
Yeah, it's going to be really hard for anyone to guard Joel Embiid. He's just been really good this year. Defensively also, he had like, what, four blocks, I'm pretty
five,
sure?
Five, I think, last
yeah,
night.
Yeah, last night. Yeah, he played really good in that game. Even he had a turnover and ran all the way down back to and blocked Jaylen Brown from behind. Yeah, I mean, it's going to be so hard to guard him. But, I mean, Miami, it's going to be hard to guard Jimmy or Bam now.
But the 76ers had a good series, but Joel Embiid coming off an injury, he said he's at like 60 to 80%. So,
well, last night he didn't look like 68%.
He said on a rate of like pain, he said 1 to 2, I believe, is what I heard the commentator say.
Yeah,
but Tyrese Maxey's been a very good player in this series. Last night he had 30, but then D'Angelo Harris Jr. last night, you don't see him get very much playing time. They signed him this offseason to a pretty small deal, but last night he played 15 minutes and he had 10 points.
But yeah, for my 76ers, obviously they are my favorite to make it to the finals. As you were mentioning, their series with Boston now being 3-2. I think going back to Philadelphia and playing in that type of environment, obviously the Philadelphia sports fans are a very hyped up sports base, I guess you
dedicated,
could say. But for Tyrese Maxey, I think the 30 points last night definitely proved that he can do it, and I'm hoping he can do it once again by the end of this series. James Harden, obviously, bringing somebody out, John Howe, I believe, was involved in the Michigan whole school thing. He brought him out, and then he had 40 points that game and hit the arguably game-winning buzzer beater. But for Joel Embiid, Lucas, like you said, he is back on injury for this series. I know that his knee was bothering him, but so far he hasn't shown many signs of injury. I mean, game one, he had like 19, but coming back off of an injury for game one, I think 19 points is very solid. But yeah, I think the Sixers do advance to the Eastern Conference Finals.
Yeah, but to look for the games here this evening, of course, first off at 7:30 tip. Once again, you listeners, you'll be hearing this well past these games, but as of now, Wednesday, May 10th, as I was mentioning, we got Miami Knicks, of course, same situation there as the other game this evening with the Lakers, Golden State. Both teams can have the ability to advance. Say the Heat win on the road, and then the Lakers win on the road. They can both advance to that conference finals. But personally, I think Golden State is going to give the Lakers their run for the money. They're not going to let them get off easy. I think they're winning at least one more game. Of course, they'd have to win it here or the series will be over. So I have Golden State here this evening at 10. I think, of course, Golden State at home can definitely be a challenge to take down. Those Golden State fans definitely becoming some of the top, most notorious fans in the NBA. And then for the other side of things with the Miami Knicks, I think this game could go either way. I think at this point, I'm going to say Heat. I think the Knicks, sure, again, I think the Knicks are also a very dedicated fan base and notorious for it. But I think you look at that Julius Randle post-game interview, he just said, I'm pretty sure his quote was just, they wanted it more than us or something like that. And I think if that's your mindset, I think I don't know if you're going to win this one in the first place. I think you're going to let off the Heat easy. But then again, I think the Knicks could heat up. And once again, it's not easy to win in New York. So I'm going to go with Heat and then Golden State for the evening. And then I think one series will finish up. Heat will advance to the conference finals. But Golden State will at least give the Lakers one more game.
Yeah, Golden State. They're back home for this game six, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like they're going to win this one, but then I think Lakers will take game seven and go to those conference finals. And then I feel like whoever wins the Celtics and 76ers, I feel like they could win the finals. Those are probably the two most stacked teams right now.
So tonight I probably have Golden State, but it just depends on the lineup they play because their last game, they lost 101-104. They decided to put Draymond at the five, and they decided to start small, which has kind of been a key for the Warriors, but it didn't work out in this case. So if they go with that, I got to go with the Lakers, and then it's hard to win in the Garden in New York. So I think the Knicks have been one of the best home games when it comes to playoff appearances in the Garden. Jalen Brunson has had one of the most iconic stuff numbers in the Garden this year, dropping 30, I believe, game one. So I got to go with the Knicks.
But yeah, for the Lakers-Warriors series, as we all pretty much have agreed, Warriors at home are pretty hard to beat, and I don't think Stephen Curry will let LeBron pull away with the 4-1 series. So I think if Klay Thompson and Jordan Poole show up tonight, they definitely could win this series, or not series, excuse me, they could win the game tonight. But for Heat-Knicks, I know that Julius Randle is arguably probably the worst playoff performer we have seen in just a couple of years. So them playing at Madison Square Garden is an advantage. But I think if Julius Randle doesn't put up at least 25 tonight, the Heat will win the series to advance.
Yeah, but it would be pretty cool to see Golden State and Curry get revenge on LeBron for that 3-1. They beat him in the finals all the way back in the day. And of course, that'd be kind of cool to see. I might be a bit biased. I have Golden State winning the series, and I think at this point it's going to be a challenge. But this is only this is game five. So say Golden State wins here at home, they push that series to 3-2. I say if they win at Los Angeles, then I think they win the series. I think if it goes to a game seven at Golden State, I have Golden State in that game. I think, again, you guys were mentioning, I think Steph Curry is going to do what he does. He's going to drop 30 points, but it's going to depend on how the supporting cast, how the bench performs for Golden State. If Klay is on his A game, if Jordan Poole has a breakout game, maybe even Draymond Green, as Lucas was mentioning, Warriors like to run small ball. And I think although it might not work against the Lakers, who are pretty much the opposite, of course, having some pretty big dudes on the team with AD and LeBron, but I think, again, you look on the ESPN right now, this game is pretty much a 50-50 for this evening. So we will see. But moving over to that Suns-Denver series, of course, we already talked a bit on that. Of course, Denver moved up now in the series 3-2 with that last game. They just beat them last night. That final score of that was 111-102. And although I think the Suns have all this firepower, of course, Chris Paul, was he out for that one as well? I know he was out for the last couple games. I think he was out last night. So that obviously is hurting them. But I think on top of that, I mean, you still got Devin Booker. You still got KD, DeAndre Ayton down low. I think this Suns team is definitely not out of it. I would definitely not count them out of it. And at the same time, you look at Denver. I mean, sure, you got Jokic, you got Jamal Murray. But I think at the same time, you don't got too much firepower. And heading into the playoffs, I thought the Bucks were much better of a one seed than the Nuggets were. But I guess maybe not. And again, I don't think the series is completely over, and I think the Phoenix Suns will take down this next game. I have them winning at home as well to push it to a game seven, but beating the Nuggets at home is definitely a challenge. So I think I could see this series going to seven games, and then I don't know. As of now, I'd say Denver's going to pull away with it.
Yeah, I feel like they're going to go to game seven. I feel like Phoenix is going to win this game this Thursday and then bring it to game seven, but I mean, it's going to be hard. As you said, it's going to be hard playing in Denver. Denver's fans are pretty loud, but Suns, as you said, Chris Paul, DeAndre Ayton's had a little bit of controversy being benched in that crucial last minute. I think it was game two or three. I can't remember which game it was. I feel like that's going to play a little bit of a role. And you said Chris Paul is out. feel like KD and Devin Booker are going to show up and give them a good run for this these last two games.
I think the Suns do win at home, but then you got to go back to Denver where there's the elevation change, which is very difficult for
that should be mentioned there because that can have an effect on the
anyone because even it's an indoor arena, ball arena is, but even hockey players have said, like, if you're not used to it because the Colorado Avalanche play in the same stadium, it's their dual use. And they say it's one of the hardest places to play in the Stanley Cup because you got to go back and forth, change an environment. And if Kentavious Caldwell-Pope heats up, he's had a couple big games in the playoff series so far, and he's a very good defender. The Lakers probably shouldn't have traded him in that deal for, I think, Russell Westbrook, and then Washington sent him to Denver in the offseason as well.
But yeah, for the Nuggets and Suns, I know that Chris Paul is injured, and the Suns are at home tonight, correct?
Yeah.
So I think, honestly,
not tonight, but their next game, I think it's in a
Thursday.
Couple days.
Yeah. Thursday. I think it might go to seven, but if it does, I think Jokic will show up. Obviously, Jamal Murray has been a very good playoff performer. And we can't forget Aaron Gordon and Michael Jordan. Michael Porter Jr. He has also been very good for them this series. So I think with Chris Paul out, I'm not sure who the backup point guard is. Does anybody know?
Landry Shamet.
Yeah, I think that's right.
I think with Jamal Murray being as consistent as he has been in the playoffs, I think they do need a better defensive point guard, and obviously with Landry Shamet not being too good of a defender, I think that will be something that the Suns do have to adjust to. But with Devin Booker and KD showing out the series, I think it will go to seven, but I have the Nuggets advancing.
Yeah, but with that, we've covered all the matchups here, so we'll go ahead and look over to the NBA offseason side of things. Of course, half of the team playing right now, but there's still many more teams kind of rebuilding as the playoffs are going underway here, of course. There's a lot of talk about Victor Wembanyama these last couple of days. I saw just a notification last night. He will not be going to the NBA Combine. He's deciding to not declare for that. He won't be participating in it. And personally, I think that's an all right thing to say for Victor. And I think at this point, and what we see for a lot of sports in their combine, is if you don't have anything to prove, there's no point going in there. I think that's Victor, right? If you go, if you don't go, he's going to be the first overall pick most likely. I'd say like 99% he will be. So I think at this point, it's just, I'm going to stay here in France. Don't make the trouble to go out. And he knows either way, he's going to be the first pick. But then again, I think, as we talked about in the last episode or two episodes ago with the hot takes, there are some red flags around Victor, of course, being as tall as he is, being as kind of lengthy as he is. The injuries are a situation. On top of that, I mean, sure, he's a crazy prospect, his player profile, but his stats aren't incredible. I mean, he's averaging 20 over in France, and his highlights, sure, he has a couple crazy highlights, but we've seen him on the defensive end. He's destroyed a couple times on the defensive end, so I don't know. Again, I think he'll be the first pick, and I really hope the Pistons get him. Of course, being a Pistons fan, I'd be ecstatic to get Victor. I think, sure, our center room is very full now with Jalen Duren and James Wiseman, but I think I'd take him and then maybe trade away one of those guys. So, you guys can go around that. Just discuss a bit about Victor. If you think that was a smart move for him to stay out of the combine, or if you think he should have declared, and then maybe what team do you think you would like to see Victor the most on?
Victor, yeah, I feel like it's not a bad idea not to go to the NBA draft. As you said, nothing to prove. He's already shown a lot of his talent. A lot of people have already seen it. I feel like he will go to the Pistons with the first pick, but I feel like he might be a bust, as me and Aiden both agreed on. He might be a bust. He's really small. He doesn't have a whole lot of size on him. I mean, if you go up against a person like Joel Embiid, I feel like it's going to be really hard to guard Joel Embiid or just even score. And then you got Giannis. Nikola Jokic is pretty big also. The centers in the NBA, it's a lot different than going into France in the European League.
Yeah, but I think he probably should have went to the NBA Combine so scouts could get a better understanding of his history and, like, where to put him so he has more reasonable expectations. Because the Combine is for scouts to get more expectations with you than just what other people are saying and what you've already seen to see him actually against the other prospects coming out into the NBA draft. Because sure, there's a lot of European players coming out, but they're not as good as some of the college players like Brandon Miller, Scoot Henderson's mm-hmm. most likely come into the combine as well. So it would have been a great opportunity for him to really test his skills against players against who's coming out in the same draft class. And the team he's on, he dropped to the worst team in France last year purposely so he gets all the possessions and everything. Because before that, he was on Tony Parker's French team where he only averaged 6 and 8 points a game. Sure, he came off the bench battling injuries, but overall, he was in the best team in France where most of the national players go for their FIBA tournament and to play for the French national team. Most of those players have went to the NBA and have pretty successful careers, so I don't understand why he dropped to the worst team in France just to have all the playing time and average these crazy numbers. So going to the combine would make a lot of sense.
I mean, yeah, as you were saying, Lucas, him dropping to the worst team, not saying that the Brooklyn Nets are the worst team, but you have to look at Mikal Bridges. Obviously, he did get his shine with a couple games left in the regular season, but then they got swept 4-0 in the first round of the playoffs. So I think that's definitely something to mention, and I didn't know that, actually. And Ryan, me and you were saying Victor could very well be a bust. I think even though he does have a lot of potential, I think the injuries and just the skill level in France will hold him back. But to predict where he will go, I think whoever has the first pick in the draft will pick Victor Wembanyama,
yeah,
just because obviously he's the most hyped up prospect since LeBron James. But honestly, if he can't develop into a more stable modern day center, I don't think he will survive in the league.
Yeah, and I think I saw a lot of talk about how the Rockets, a lot of people would like to see Victor on the Rockets. Of course, with the NBA lottery, if you don't know, I think the top three teams have a 14% chance, I think is the number, yeah, to get that first overall pick. Rockets are among them. I think Pistons and what's the third team?
Is it Hornets? Might be. Or Spurs. I think it might Hornets, be Spurs. Spurs.
Yeah, but yeah, Rockets, of course, currently they have LP at the center spot, but again, Victor would definitely fit in there. But back to the Pistons, I mean, I was talking about them just before. Of course, they're my favorite team, and I've kind of been making this dream offseason for the Pistons, saying we get Victor Wembanyama, we get that first overall pick, we draft him, and then say we can trade away either Jalen Duren or James Wiseman. I think I'd rather keep Jalen Duren at this point. I mean, he's the youngest player in the league. He got all rookie second team, but overall, I think I would like to see one of those centers go, maybe trade for a solid forward and then pick up another maybe veteran piece in free agency. I would love to see Draymond Green. His contract is expiring. Maybe he'll want to leave Golden State for the first time. And then I think a veteran, very solid defender like that. I think the Pistons could be very solid next year. Looking back to that hot takes episode, hot take of mine was about to be the Pistons will be a contender in the East next year, but I kind of drew back on that a bit. But hey, if that offseason, if they get that first overall pick, if they add on of those forward positions, I think that'll be very solid. But we have a couple more minutes here, so one last thing I want to look at. Of course, the all-rookie teams just got released here recently. I was pretty upset Jaden Ivey didn't get all-rookie first team. I saw a lot of comments that agreed with me that he was the snub, that he should have got all-rookie first team instead of the Thunder's Jalen Williams. I don't know why I want to say Jamal Williams, but a lot of people said Jaden Ivey should have had that spot instead of him. And I agree, of course, being a Pistons fan, that's the whole reason I'm a Pistons fan, is because of Jaden Ivey. So we'll see. I think Jaden Ivey, especially towards the end of the season, he was the better class of the rookies. I think he was second in scoring or third for scoring among all rookies. I think he was first in assists a game for all rookies. So I don't know, but just taking a look at those lists, I'm not sure of any other of the all NBA teams or whatever, if any others came out yet. I think the defenders did, didn't they? Because I saw Dylan Brooks made all defense second team. Yeah, but you guys can look at those lists. What are your really first reactions on all those?
I think the rookie team's fine. I feel like Jalen Williams had a good second half of the season. So did Jalen Ivey. But overall, he should have been probably that second guard in there. Or you could have even took Benedict Mather into the second team, because overall, he started out pretty hot, but then he kind of toned down and just kind of rid out the rest of the season.
Yeah, I feel like, Benedict Mathurin, Pacers, he did pretty good this year. Paolo Banchero was a unanimous vote. I feel like that was, yeah. I mean, I don't think anyone could have gone wrong with picking Paolo Banchero. As you said, Jaden Ivey, I feel like he should have made it over Jalen Williams. Jaden Ivey was one, I think he started all year. A few times. I mean, he had a problem with turnovers, but I feel like that's because he didn't have that veteran role there to help him with that. I feel like going on the next few seasons, he's going to get a lot better with those turnovers. That's probably his biggest. That's probably what was holding him back from getting into that first team.
I mean, yeah, I believe I did say earlier on a couple like past episodes, Jaden Ivey, I think something that he does need to improve on are those turnovers. Obviously, with not many veterans on the Pistons besides like Alec Burks, I think that's something that they can improve on during the offseason, Dawson, as you were mentioning. But for the all-rookie first team, I don't think there is any mistakes. I mean, you see Paolo, unanimous vote. Walker Kessler was up there for Defensive Player of the Year. So him being on first-team rookie is definitely expected. And Benedict Mathurin, I think he is the worst talent. He's not bad, but I think he's the lowest player to be deserving of that list. Obviously, Keegan Murray did have a good season with the Sacramento Kings, therefore making it to the playoffs. And Jalen Williams, he was the second option behind Shai in Oklahoma. So I think besides Benedict Mathurin, maybe for somebody on the second team, maybe like Jabari Smith, possibly, the all-rookie first team is definitely no mistakes, I don't think, were made.
Yeah, but you look over, all-NBA team will be released actually tonight, so we won't be able to look at that much. But for the all-defense team, that one is out. I think that really just got released in these past couple days. The first team, you look at that, that's Jaren Jackson. He received the most votes, received 96 first-team votes, only 3 second-team votes, and then that is for a total of 195. So he led all players for scoring for that of all first defensive teams, you could say. You look at some of the other players, Drew Holiday for the Bucks, Brooke Lopez for the Bucks, and then Evan Mobley for Cleveland. Alex Caruso got on that first team for Chicago, which that one, he had the lowest amount of votes among that first team, and I think you could have maybe thrown in another guy. I think OG Adonobi's there, although he is registered as a forward, so he there really isn't really way he could get into that first. I think he might have been more deserving than Alex Caruso. That first half of the season, OG was definitely kind of that Defensive Player of the Year front runner. I think he averaged like 4.5 steals a game in that first half of the season, but he kind of slowed down. Of course, it looks like Jaren Jackson, he was the best defender in the league, at least according to a lot of the NBA committee here for the all-NBA teams, you could say. A player I'm kind of disappointed to see so far down the list, Bam Adebayo. I think he's a great defender, and I think he should have been at least a couple more spots up on the list. Of course, Dylan Brooks, a lot of people said he didn't really deserve to be on that all-NBA second team for all-defense, sorry about that, all-defense second team, but I think he did have a very solid season, and he really led the way for the Grizzlies on the defensive side of the ball. But overall, go around, what are your first reactions to this? Who do you think you saw a bit too high, maybe a bit too low, or maybe not even on the list that you would like to see?
I feel like Alex Caruso was a bit too high for this, for being on the first team. I feel like second team, but Drew Holiday and Jaren Jackson are probably, Drew Holiday, I think, is the best defending guard out there right now. And then Jaren Jackson Jr., what, he averaged three blocks a game or something like that?
Around that. It was definitely high,
though. It was the most in the league, I'm pretty sure.
And then Brooke Lopez, just the size, it's so hard to get around him. It's so difficult to guard also.
I think Dylan Brooks should have been on the third team defensively because he's a good defender, but not all-NBA second team. I feel like other guys in that situation are a better guard defender. Like, you could have put Marcus Smart ahead of him, even though you already had a Celtic with Derek White. Malcolm Brogdon's a little bit better. You could have put Alex Caruso to the second team and put another guard on first team. Like, Patrick Beverley could have fit this easily. So there were better options at the position than Dylan Brooks' second team overall.
I think some arguments you can make on this list are obviously Dylan Brooks and Derek White for Boston. I don't believe he had a very good defensive season. I think somebody that could be snubbed from that list is somebody on the 76ers, D'Anthony Melton. He did lead the league in steals for a little bit during the season, so I think that him not making the list at all is definitely very surprising. And for first team, I think Alex Crusoe is way too far ahead than he should be. I think he maybe should have made third team, but honestly, that's all the opinions I have for the all defensive teams.
Yeah, and another player to mention here leading the pack for the points on the second team, Derek White. Personally, I didn't really realize he was that high of a contender for a defensive player. And obviously, he is, I mean, being that first leading the second team and tons of great defenders among them, a player I would like to see a bit higher, I'm happy to see high, Brook Lopez from Milwaukee. I think he was a very underrated defender for the first half. He got a bit more credit towards the end of the season when a lot more award prediction articles and headlines came out. He definitely got a lot more shine, but I think he was a great defender that didn't get a lot of talk there at the beginning. But with that, that is all the time we have. So with that, we hope you all enjoyed. Once again, alongside Ryan Davis, Aiden Wilson, and Lucas Card, I'm at Dawson Peril. Once again, you can expect a new episode every Wednesday here for the ASN Sports Talk, but that'll do it. We hope you all have a nice day. You're listening to the ASN Sports Talk 91.7 WEEM.